Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
All right, hot stove heating up for the Mariners. Meanwhile, the Seahawks in a must-win, what would I call it, a must-win? Very important to win game against the Rams this weekend. Bring it on, Larry Stone, now of the Seattle Times on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook hotline to talk to us about both teams. Let's start with the Mariners, though, Larry. We just heard from Jerry Dipoto this morning, who said that right now it's kind of all quiet until the winter meetings and don't expect a lot of big moves. Are you, in general, expecting a big splashy move for the Mariners this offseason?
Well, they've made one that's fair splashy already by getting Teoscar Hernandez. I would not be surprised if they made another splashy move, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they did it below the radar, under the radar, with quieter moves that maybe won't excite the fans, but they feel will fill the needs that they have. I mean, people, I'm sure, want them to sign one of those big shortstops or get a big name outfielder. I think they'll try, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was more incremental stuff.
Larry, is this the approach to the offseason that you were expecting with the Mariners? Or did you expect them to be more aggressive out the gate? Thoughts there.
Well, you know, if people want moves right away. You don't have to get your team assembled until opening day. You know, sometimes the Winker Suarez trade was made in the middle of spring training last year. It's not really when you do it. That's one thing I've learned over the years. It's just getting it done. And sometimes these things move at their own speed. I think that the Teoscar trade was a pretty aggressive trade. I did expect them to be in on one of those shortstops, Dansby Swanson, Bogarts, Turner, Correa. It doesn't look like it's moving in that direction, which does surprise me a little bit. But Jerry makes deals, and there's going to be some more deals made. And there's probably going to be a couple that are going to surprise us that we don't see coming.
Does the lack of movement with those shortstops from the Mariners surprise you because you thought that they were a little more attainable than last year's class of shortstops, or because they seemed slightly more willing to move JP?
Well, yeah, the stance on JP just continues to kind of puzzle me. This stance that we don't want to move JP, we would rather convince these shortstops to play second base. I just frankly don't understand that. You've got this tremendous need for more offense. You need a middle infield position. If one of those guys wants to play shortstop, to me, you should move JP to second. I think, he would do it. I think he's a team player. I wouldn't let it be what stands between signing one of those guys and not signing them. Jerry has left the door open, with our preferences to keep JP at shortstop. But I thought that they could go hard after one of those guys, and maybe none of them really want to come to Seattle, and maybe that's why Jerry feels comfortable saying we're going to keep JP at shortstop, because why entertain the thought of moving him if you know through back channels and through talking to agents that you don't have a chance at one of those guys anyway. But it just seems like any of those four really would fill a huge need for the Mariners.
Larry, I always take what coaches say and GMs with a grain of salt, right? It's like, all right, they're not going to let you know exactly what they want to do or they're going to do. But we heard them mention that, maybe they can find a guy at second base that could share the spot with like a Dylan Moore or something like that. Do you think that's really their approach, or is that just where they are now because of circumstances? Are they just bluffing? I'm confused, Larry. Help me out here.
Well, I'm sure they're going through a bunch of scenarios, Bump, and that's probably one of them. I think they prefer to get an everyday guy. The name Gleyber Torres has been kicked around. Yankee shortstop who had a huge year two or three years ago. I think he had 30-something homers. And actually had his best WAR year last year, 4.2, I think, without looking it up right now. He's a very interesting name. You know, Colton Wong is another name that's always floated around with the Mariners. They tried for him before with the Brewers. The Brewers ended up with him. So, you know, I'd be surprised if they went the platoon route and didn't get an everyday player to play that position. Moore is a guy that they do want to find playing time as a kind of a super utility guy, I think. So, you know, it's within the realm of possibility.
The Mariners, unsurprisingly, given DePoto's history, a team that have always liked making trades, been more willing to make trades. And I think that we always assumed also, Larry, that part of it was, well, man, until the Mariners prove they can win, how many free agents are going to want to come here? Maybe you got to make sure guys have no choice but to come here. Do you think, though, that they're running out of some capital? I mean, I do think they prefer the trade route, but I just wonder, you know, how many more weapons they have to move.
Yeah, that's a valid question. You know, their farm system, which was number one, I'll be very interested when the new rankings come out, but they'll probably be, you know, 15 or below, I would imagine, with all the guys that they've traded away. But they still have some guys to trade. You know, I mean, if they want to, a guy like Emerson Hancock would be a huge trade chip if they want to go that route. On the other hand, you know, you want to keep guys like Emerson Hancock, a first round pick with a really high upside. You want to keep them for yourself if at all possible. And that's the beauty of signing the free agents. You don't have to give up any talent, just money. Easy for us to say, right? But I do think that what you mentioned earlier about finding it hard to attract free agents to Seattle, I think that should be waning now. They finally got to the playoffs. They look like a team that's going to be a contender for a while. I think opposing teams could look at the vibe that the Mariners had last year and see that they, you know, seems like a fun team with guys like each other, you know, easy manager to play for. They should be able to attract free agents in a way that they haven't in previous years. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. Mm. And then you have a guy like Michael Conforto, who's really, you know, a former All-Star who's coming off shoulder injury, who's going to be in pretty high demand, but he's a local kid who went to Redmond High School. So you wouldn't face the normal doubts of people. Oh, I don't want to play in the Pacific Northwest and the travel and all that. He's from here. They could have a leg up on a guy like him, who to me is a very intriguing bounce back candidate and a guy who could potentially fill an outfield spot.
Larry, you're a versatile guy. Let's talk a little football.
Wait, let me put on my shoulder pad.
Let's switch it up real quick. Man, I'm looking at this game, Larry, and I'm like, if there was a must-win game of the season, it has to be against the Rams with no quarterback, two receivers gone. Who's going to be the running back? Offense is struggling. Do you feel that the same way about this game against the Rams?
I really do. Yeah, you know, you've got a two-game slide going here. You know, you've got to get this thing back on track before you know, it's panic time. You know, if you lose this game to a team that's they've lost five in a row, I think, and I think seven out of eight, they're collapsing. The Rams are collapsing. They've lost many of their key personnel. It is on the road, but it's right. They're right for the taking. And if you don't win this game, then there's serious questions that come into play about whether this team can finish off what had been a magical run. Is it all falling apart? So yeah, this is one that they should, could, and really must win.
It feels impossible sometimes. We're speaking with Larry Stone of the Seattle Times. We were talking Mariners, switching gears to talk Seahawks here. Larry covers it all. I was trying to, Bump and I, find some kind of common denominator with so many of the defensive struggles. I don't think it's just Pete Carroll. I don't think it's just one defensive coordinator. I don't think it's John Schneider. I mean, because you've seen really good versions, right, of a defense with all these guys. So it's like, okay, what hasn't been working for the past couple years? It's hard for me not to look at just missing out on an elite edge rusher or just an elite pass rush in general. They really haven't tapped into that guy, and they haven't had a guy get those double-digit sacks since Frank Clark. Is that an area where you could potentially see them adding with one of their first-round picks?
Yeah, Stacy, I think that's perfectly said. And that the beauty, one of the many beauties of the Russell Wilson trade is that draft pick that you're getting keeps getting keeps getting better and better. What is it, number three now or number four?
Yeah, four.
And the way the Broncos are collapsing, it could end up being even better. So that's where you get elite edge rushers in the top five picks in the draft. And I would be not at all surprised if that's what they use it on. And, you know, they still have another first round pick and a couple of at least one really high second round pick from the Broncos. So they can really do a lot with the draft. And I agree that their target with a really high now top of the draft pick will be an edge rusher. I would be very surprised if it wasn't.
Larry, you've covered the Hawks and Bobby Wagner over his career while he was here in Seattle. He's now obviously in L.A. What were your interactions like with Bobby? I've never heard one person say one bad thing about Bobby Wagner. Of course, you can critique his play. That's just how sports go. But what were your interactions like with him?
Yeah, they were very good. He's one of my favorite guys I've ever covered. You know, last year he did this thing where he announced on the first, you know, he was one of the guys they brought in every Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember which day it was, but once every week he came in and he said, we're going to do it a little differently this year. We're going to address subjects like, entrepreneurship and things like that. Or my favorite book that I have read this week. And it was a completely unique way to handle a press conference, and I thought it was great. I ended up writing a whole column about it last year, long column about what each of his topics that he brought up, and you know how it was instead of just boring X's and O's talk and you know one game at a time, you know, cliche stuff. It was real, you know, real meaningful stuff, and I really appreciated that. And it was something that you just don't get every day in a setting like that. And so, you know, that was typical of Bobby, very thoughtful, very, he was deeper than just a linebacker. There was more to him than that. And I appreciated that.
Yeah. He was a guy I never heard a bad thing said or anything. It's you obviously try to be really professional in media and we get a little more leeway on radio to be a little more biased, but, like having been a reporter, I remember you'd always try to be like very professional. You don't root for anyone, right? You just cover the team. But there would once in a while be guys where you'd be like, God, all these interviews with this person are just so cordial and he's so helpful. And you root for the success of people that are good people in general. And you just run into those players once in a while in whatever sport. Who have been some players, Larry, because you're a reporter, you're great at your job. Who have been some players that have kind of pushed you to that area of being like, you know, I'm a professional and I cover this person, but like, God, it's hard not to root for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Edgar going back a ways, I ended up, you know, developing a relationship with him and worked with him on his biography, his autobiography. Certainly, you know, someone like Sue Bird, just, you know, as far as dealing with the media and, you know, unsurpassed, and someone like her, I think you can't help but, you know, but pull for. Those are a couple that come quickly to mind. But there's been, you know, I've been most people that you deal with are really good. You know, I've been doing it for over 40 years, and I would say the vast majority. You know, you remember some of the ones who aren't, but most people try to make it work and are as cooperative as can be. Some just don't like, some just feel more comfortable with media dealings than others. And I try to respect that, you know. I'm not so sure if I were an athlete, how good I would be in interview situations. So I try to be empathetic that just not everybody is gregarious and feels comfortable in that situation. But you know, you could just tell the genuine people who are most of the time, you know, sometimes you're fooled. You think people are good people and then something will happen. Whoa, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. You know, some off the field incident or something.
Yeah. Fully agree though. And agree with you that Bobby was one of those guys where you just, you know, you're so, just kind of happy to cover that person. Makes the job pretty easy. He is Larry Stone of the Seattle Times, kind enough to join us today to talk Mariners and Seahawks. Double duty here. You can read his work at seattletimes.com. Make sure you're doing so. Larry, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks.
See ya. This hour of Bump and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, what's something that needs to remain consistent about the Rams on Sunday?
This is not an explosive offense, Stacey, and they need to remain a not explosive offense.
Do not let this be the Cam Akers. Van Jefferson game.
This can't be a coming out party. This can't be like, wow, we found something in this young running back.
Is Van Jefferson a Pro Bowler?
Right. Van's been back, what, a few games. She's coming off of two knee surgeries. You got Cam Akers, who left for a while. You got the young running back from Notre Dame back there. Two receivers are gone. Last week against the Chiefs, their longest play for scrimmage was 16 yards. Right. The week before that, against the Saints, their longest play from scrimmage was 23 yards, and that was a scramble from the quarterback. It's like, look, okay, these guys are a 10-yard play, 8-yard play, 12-yard play. If I see 40, 50, 35, 35, 40 pop up on the long when it comes to plays, I'm going to be concerned, because I look at this offense and I go, there's nothing really there. You got Higbee, who's now your leading receiver. He was number two when everyone was healthy. After that, you're dealing with Van Jefferson. You're dealing with Tutu Atwell. You're dealing with this other kid. I want to jack up his name, number 18.
But that should tell you what you need to know. The fact that if at any point you need to search to look up the receiver that just caught the 60-yard touchdown, you're in trouble.
Yeah. So just keep them as average as they've been. Do not let this be the game where they all of a sudden figure something out and guys are getting contracts because they went for $120 against the Hawks.
That's right. Keep it average. That is my motto in life. Second down. What have you seen out of the young Rams quarterback Bryce Perkins, and who do you expect to start between him or Wofford?
So now I watch Perkins and I see a young quarterback. I see a guy who forgets to carry out a play fake after he hands the football off. You know what I mean? I see a guy who's slow with his feet. I see him processing so much. And it's almost like it's cute. It's like, oh, look at that young quarterback, man. He's out there trying to figure it out.
But you sound like me right now going,
oh. Right? Oh, look at Perkins. He's out there trying to get it. You know what I'm saying? Big ups to University of Virginia. That's Big Ray. That's where Perkins went to.
Shout out, Virginia. I just see
a guy who has the capabilities. He reminds me of a younger Geno when he runs, too. Like, athletic enough to pick up some yards, but not going to break it 25, 30 yards. And then who do I expect to start? Honestly, I expect Perkins to start, because I think they do a bit more with him when it comes to him running the football as well. They have design run plays for this young man. Now, Wofford beat us last year. I wouldn't be surprised if they go that route, because he has the experience. But Perkins, man, I see a young quarterback trying to figure it out. He will make some mistakes. He can beat you with his legs just a little bit. Nothing too scary. I expect him to start.
Hey, I'm going to backtrack to first down really, really quickly for like 20 seconds here. You talked about, you know, one thing that needs to remain consistent for the Rams is that they can't have explosive plays, because they haven't been having explosive plays all year long. Now, every game is going to have a couple. Coaching staffs leave room for, like, you know, three explosive plays, which would be a pass play over 16 yards or a run play over 12 or something like that.
Right.
It's not the end of the world. It happens. What's a number where you'd be like, more than this, done? Like, horrible game.
Like, explosive plays or yards?
You could define it as, like an explosive play would be pass play over 16, but you could be, like, let's say over 20.
Yeah.
Which, in my mind, is kind of an explosive play in today's.
Man, they get one of them things.
One?
One play over 20 yards. Stacey, I'm telling you.
They're that bad.
I'm looking. I don't see anybody who can beat them right now.
Right.
Now, Higbee might be able to go across the middle, maybe catch one for 20, 25 yards. Other than that, Van Jefferson is coming off the injuries. I don't see it.
All right, third down. Well, let's talk about who's going to be stopping explosive plays from Seattle, or at least trying to. Do you expect Jalen Ramsey to follow DK on Sunday?
100%. 100% I expect Jalen Ramsey to follow DK. I think that they both look forward to this matchup. There's so much pride when it comes to these two guys. Here's the last six games DK against Ramsey and the Rams. He had 6 for 78, 2 for 28, 6 for 59, 5 for 96, 2 touchdowns, 5 for 98 and 2 touchdowns, and 6 for 52. So the last three times they have played, DK Metcalf has been doing his thing.
Okay, DK.
And just because of Jalen's personality, I know he's going to want to. I think certain times they will have him follow, and then certain times they'll say, okay, just stay to your side and drop it to your zone. I hope he does, because I love matchups like this. I want to see DK and Jalen go at it.
Fourth down. All right, the O-line needs a bounce-back game. So what does a bounce-back game look like from an offensive line?
There's no Aaron Donald, right?
No Aaron Donald, no A'shaun Robinson.
No A'shaun Robinson. You still got Leonard Floyd over there. You still got Bobby Wagner. But because Aaron Donald is not there, I expect at least the interior to be more stout than they were last week. Now, what does it look like? It looks like a successful game or a bounce-back game for the O-line. Looks like Ken Walker doesn't have a defender waiting for him as soon as you hand the football off to him. It looks like you're getting a push on that offensive line. Geno has a pocket to step in and throw the football. All the things you look for. And I think, again, this is the week for a bounce back. Abe Lucas, we're going to talk to him later today. Mm-hmm. He's healthy. He was sick last week. My guy fought through it and then had
his flu game.
Yeah, to fight through some stuff. So it just looks clean, man. It looks like you're getting pushed on the line. Ken Walker's moving down the field. Geno looks good in that pocket. And this is the week to do it. You need to check some boxes off this week.
All right, don't forget, tonight you can join hosts Michael Bumpus and Paul Moyer at 7 p.m. at Bellevue Square Center Court for a live broadcast and preview of this Sunday Seahawks game. It is Hawks Live tonight, 7 p.m., Bellevue Square Center Court. Be there. This week also at Hawks Live, we're giving you a chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the Panthers. Obviously, that's not this weekend, but it is the next home game on the 11th. So learn more at seattlesports.com, 7 p.m. tonight. Be there or be square. See, bump, bump, bump.
Thanks for the pub, man.
You got it, buddy. coming up in the timeline, Kyler Murray is really upset about something Patrick Peterson said about him. However, I think a lot of you are going to agree with Patrick Peterson on this one. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. In this case, you're going to hear a little bit of it, too. Patrick Peterson, former Cardinals cornerback, has a podcast where he was talking about Kyler Murray. Now, there's plenty to talk about with the Arizona Cardinals this year. They've had a very disappointing season again, including some controversial moments where you saw Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury kind of yelling at each other, and you have Hopkins coming back looking not too happy, so plenty to talk about there.
Yeah.
Patrick Peterson also doing some talking. Cut number five. Here's what he had to say about Kyler Murray.
Verbally now, vocally, Kyler Murray is talking about, and I don't like how he's doing that. I think he should keep some things privately, but it tells me he doesn't care about his head coach. And he's putting everything on the head coach, basically saying
Kyler Murray don't care about nobody but Kyler Murray. That's just a matter of the fact.
Now, the second voice is obviously Patrick Peterson. He's saying Kyler Murray only cares about Kyler Murray. And this is a response to Kyler Murray, I think, talking about the scheme when he said our scheme is blank, a word I can't say on air.
Screwed up.
Our scheme is screwed up. And he was defending play, I think, at the time from Hopkins. Mm-hmm. So defending play from Hopkins and instead pointing to the offensive staff, a.k.a. Cliff Kingsbury, saying, like, that there's your problem.
Could you imagine the conversations Kingsbury is having with, like, the people who are in his circle about this situation? Like, he has to be frustrated that the guy he's supposed to rely on the most throws him underneath the bus the most. But here's the problem I have with Peterson. And Kyler responded to this. He goes,
yes,
if you are really my big bro, you're supposed to come to me on the side instead of blasting me so the podcast blows up. I agree with that. If Kyler felt like you guys had a relationship to where you should have come to him first, then you are wrong. Now, if Kyler is delusional and you ain't really been messing with him and you guys don't have that type of relationship, then, you know, you do what you do. But especially in the NFL, it's a fraternity, and the older guys are supposed to take care of these younger guys and show them how to be professionals, hold their hand through some stuff. I just don't know what their relationship is like. So it's all contingent on the perception each one has of their relationship. It kind of determines who's right or wrong here.
What's tough about this is, like, I don't think anyone disagrees with any one party. You're right. The issue is Patrick Peterson maybe not going to Kyler Murray if they do have that relationship, because I don't think anyone disagrees that Kyler Murray probably only cares about Kyler Murray. Right. I don't think anyone disagrees with Kyler Murray that Cliff Kingsbury is a problem in Arizona.
Right.
The truth is the truth. I see no lies, at least from an outsider's perspective, with any of this.
Right.
But yeah, if you thought you were tight with this guy, obviously you used to be teammates. He's older, so he was presumably a mentor. I would also be hurt.
You know what I hear?
What?
Kyler's feelings are hurt.
Oh.
He don't care about nobody's feelings on the sideline. No, he don't care about his coach's
feelings.
No,
not at all.
So this might be a good learning situation for him because his feelings are clearly hurt. Mm-hmm. Big bro didn't take care of him. He threw him under the bus. He might have to look in the mirror and be like, maybe I should change the way I move.
I just want the two of you to know that I would never throw either of you under the bus. Never, ever, ever in a million never? Years.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I would never do that.
We'll
and
hold
I
you
have
to
never
it.
Done that.
We'll hold you to that.
Next story here.
Like, I totally could have last week, but I didn't.
All right. Next story here is Patrick Mahomes, also on a pod, sharing a wild story on how he influenced the Chiefs to draft him cut number 6.
The first day that I met Coach Reed was at the facility. We had like the meetings, like the top 30 visits. So I was in there for like 5 hours. He's just going real. Through plays, going through plays. And I'm going to give you all the inside scoop. Matt Nagy, who was the offensive coordinator then, he really liked me. So he gave me the plays they were going to go over the night before. So Coach Reed's finding out here live on New Heights podcast.
Oh, my gosh.
Matt, Maggie, how could you?
Let's go.
And yeah, so, of course, I crushed the meeting. I stayed up all night studying those plays.
It's like, man, this kid is locked in. We got ourselves a winner here.
As the process went on, I got a feeling that I was kind of going up in the draft. I had a couple of teams that said they were going to draft me, and I mean, that's true. Like, it's not like these coaches are making that up. I talked to them during the draft process, and they were like, hey, if you're there, we're gonna take you. I kind of gave a little inside info to the Chiefs, and I was like, hey, if y'all let me go anywhere below, at the time, I didn't know about the Saints, but I was like, if y'all let me go 12 or below, I'm going to get drafted by someone else.
You drafted yourself?
So I gave the Chiefs a little bit of info on that, because I wanted to be here.
I mean, you didn't draft himself.
We did. Good for him. Good for him.
But here's the... If it never ends up working out, you're like, hold up, an offensive coordinator basically gave you the answers to all the homework that they would be giving you. I mean, that's a paraphrasing way to say it, yeah. Right? Not the best comparison, but that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, no, that's homework.
And then not only that, but you went and told them what other teams have been telling you, trying to be like, hey, I want to go to you guys, so if you don't make this happen, I'm gone. But it ended up working out, so it's fine.
Imagine
if they get a lemon, it's a different story.
Yeah, it'd be totally different. What I thought about while I'm hearing him talk about Nagy giving him the playbook,
yeah,
I go back and I think about how he said, look, I just started learning how to read defenses like 2 or 3 years ago. So I'm like, okay, imagine if he didn't get that playbook and then he had to talk about these plays against a certain defense.
Yes.
He would have looked like a quarterback who had no idea what he was doing.
Well, then you think of, like, what would the – God, I can't remember the draft order then, but I know Seattle wanted it. They were way too low, though, I think. But what would it have looked like if, I don't know, Chicago – I don't remember who was in a certain order in that draft. Was that the Trubisky draft, actually?
I think it was.
Okay, yeah. It would not have been Chicago, and it would not have been
– Watson was in that one, too?
Was he?
I think he was.
Yeah, same draft. The Bears traded up to draft Mitch Trubisky, I think, at number 2 or 3.
Yeah. So you just
meanwhile, he passed on Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, so you just wonder, like, what would – not only what would that team's, you know, Kansas City look like without Mahomes, but, like, what would Mahomes look like without Kansas City?
I don't think he would be a great quarterback. I don't think he would be who he is now.
No, I think it was a perfect marriage.
Andy Reid, that was a perfect situation for him over there. Andy didn't have to play right away.
Yeah.
You go anywhere else, they're going to make him play right now.
It's funny because Matt Nagy ended up going to Chicago and inheriting a bad quarterback situation. If only you would have had that insight at number 2 overall and been like, you guys should definitely take this kid out of Texas. Not Texas A&M, out of Texas Tech.
Yeah.
All right, next story here in the timeline. Team USA's Christian Pulisic says he did not get hit where we all suspected he did. He was diagnosed with a pelvic contusion, but made it very clear, like, guys.
Well, then where'd you get hit?
Are you calling a conspiracy theory right now?
I think he just doesn't want to admit it. To
Why would
world.
You not want to admit that? There's nothing wrong with it.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with it. I think he's more of a hero if he does admit it.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it. If you are remembered as the guy that scored a goal, but at the loss or at the feeling of some very intense pain temporarily, you're an American icon.
He should have milked it. Yeah. said I should have had surgery, but I said, nah, I'm going to be back on Saturday.
Exactly. Ice me up. Put me back in.
That's exactly what he should have done. Lean into it. All right, last story here in the timeline. The Mariners will make their final payment of $3.75 million to the Mets for their portion of Robinson Cano's contract. Now, several years removed from that trade, did the Mariners win the trade? Don't forget Edwin Diaz, best closer in baseball.
Nah, I don't think they got that one, Stace.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have that payment over with, though. It's like, all right, last one. Get this over with.
Curtis, what did you think? I saw Brent Stecker, who's the editor for SeattleSports.com, saying, you know, I know that the Mets, you can say they won the trade, but the Mariners wouldn't be where they are without clearing Robinson Cano's salary.
Yeah, but it doesn't really make the sting of losing Edwin Diaz any better.
Yeah, fair.
The Mets got the best player in that trade. They win the trade.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you miss any part of the show, make sure you're subscribed to the Bump and Stacey podcast, the latest Seattle sports news available right on your phone every single weekday. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review if you do subscribe. Hype Train coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Here we are at the end of the show already. We are going to the huddle at noon. Abe Luke is going to join us. Trey Brown is going to join us. Obviously, Dave Wyman's going to join us for the entire two-hour preview show for the Seahawks' upcoming game against the Rams. That starts in 15 minutes. Before then, let's head to the station for Hype Train. Here's how it works. I tell you a trend, a prediction, a bold take, whatever in the world of sports. Whatever. And if you think it's true, more than just hype, you're like, there is substance to that, then you're boarding the train, okay? If it's nothing but hype, it's nothing but a hype train, and you're letting it go on by, so here we go.
You know what I love about this?
That I explain it every time?
You explain it, and you look at me with such seriousness. Like, look, Bump,
this is how you play hype train, a game that I invented. All the rules are fake.
Do not mess this up. Do not make me look like an idiot, okay?
That's exactly me as a child. Has just become me as an adult. Same things apply. These are the rules that I invented for the game that we are playing right now. First hype train into this station. It's Thursday night football tonight. A pretty good matchup in the AFC East between the Pats and the Bills. This is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. The Pats upset Buffalo to throw more chaos into a competitive AFC East.
Josh Allen has had a tough, three or four weeks. Not the Josh Allen we're used to seeing, right. But he still has Diggs. He still has Davis. He still has a defense that's banged up a little bit, but they're still pretty good. Who's at home?
Patriots are at home.
Doesn't matter who's at home. You know why? Because the Bills are still going to win this thing. I'm not on that train. It'd be nice to see a good game, though.
All right, the hype train, Curtis, is that the Pats will upset the Bills to throw more chaos into a competitive AFC East division. Bump is not boarding. He says it's going to be the Bills no matter what. I don't care if it's a Gillette. I don't care if it's outside my house. It's going to be the Bills winning this game. Curtis, are you boarding the train that the Pats will upset?
It kind of feels like the Bills have been playing down to their competition this year. They haven't really blown anybody out since about week two or so. It's been a while since they've really laid the hammer down. And the Patriots have a winning record. They are 6-5, though, losing to Minnesota on Thanksgiving, but they had won three in a row prior to that. But I still believe in the Bills' talent. I think they are going to get the win tonight against New England. Mac Jones does not have it this year for whatever reason. Josh Allen, for as many turnovers as he has this season, he's still one of the best quarterbacks in all of football. So I'm going with Buffalo tonight.
To make it fun and spicy, I'm going to say that the Pats do get the upset there. Defense is pretty solid. The Bills' defense has had some injuries. Josh Allen's dealing with a UCL injury. I think the Bills are good enough to get to a Super Bowl. I think they're one of the most complete teams in the NFL. I would take them 9 out of 10 times, except for this one time when, just for fun, I'm going to take the Pats. We'll see what happens. Next hype train into the station. The Seattle Kraken looking for 7 in a row when they take on the Caps tonight in Seattle. 6 in a row, though. That's not their first win streak. They won 5 in a row earlier this year. Offense significantly improved. Got some superstars on here. So the hype train is simple. The Kraken are playoff bound.
Ooh, I like this. We were told by, who told us yesterday?
Allison
said, she goes, look, after like Turkey Day,
yeah,
you have a good idea. Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark.
All right, after Turkey Day, you have a good idea of what in who teams are. And they look like a playoff team right now. So I'm on that train. Playoff bound. I need another Kraken hat.
Curtis, the hype train is that the Kraken are playoff bound. Are you boarding? Bumpus. You want to do whatever Bump does?
Bump, is that seat saved next to you? Because I'm also boarding this train. I think the Kraken are going to be playoff bound in year two. Obviously, they've got, you know, some warts defensively, whether it's between the pipes or on the blue line with their defenseman pairings. But all in all, that offense is one of the best in the league, and that's going to carry them this season. You look at the additions that they've made this season. Andre Burakovsky's been incredible. Justin Schultz has been great. You know, adding Matty Beniers, I think you can consider him an addition. You get a full season worth of him. They look so much more competent offensively than they did a year ago. I think that's going to carry them into the postseason.
Absolutely agree. I am also boarding this train. We are 3 for 3 on this one. The only thing keeping me hesitant, also, yes, the play defensively. However, it is not bad all the time. It is just inconsistent. And I think two good winning streaks are enough to show you that, like, when they're in trouble, sometimes they can play themselves out of it offensively. They are so much better with goal scoring. The goaltending isn't as abysmal. I don't think they're a Stanley Cup team. Knock on wood, maybe they will be. But I think they are good enough to be in the playoffs, and I cannot wait to watch playoff hockey. All right, next one. Hot stoves heating up, at least leading into the winter meetings. Probably get hotter after that. No big moves, really, around the league so far. Of course, you got Jose Abreu signing with the Astros. Teoscar Hernandez being acquired via trade by the Mariners. But the big name everyone's watching, Aaron Judge, remains unsigned. This is the hype train. Aaron Judge will be a Yankee in 2023.
Yeah, he ain't going nowhere. I'm on that train. I think the Yankees are going to do everything they can to keep this man, and they should. You know what I mean? He's theirs. So, nothing too crazy. This Yankees going to throw some money at him. He's going to stay in his comfort zone and have another good year.
He's been linked to a couple different teams, was recently spotted on a visit potentially with the Giants. Curtis, the hype train is that Aaron Judge will be a Yankee in 2023. Bump is boarding. He sees him staying in New York. Are you?
I also see him staying in New York, so I'm going to board this train. I saw a funny tweet. I forget who it was. They said Aaron Judge signing with the Giants seems redundant because he's already giant. it's like, yeah, we get it. You're huge.
Exactly.
Oh, you're pulling for the Giants
now? Little on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, he just seems like the next in line of those Yankee legends that spends their entire career in New York. Like Derek Jeter, you know, like Don Mattingly, all those guys. And the Yankees have the money to hand over to Aaron Judge. And
right.
I think their fan base would revolt if Judge went anywhere else, especially coming off the season that he did. Although they were booing him in the playoffs, which is very New York to boo a guy who hit 62 home runs during regular season.
You know what I would be most afraid of if I was part of the Yankees front office? The single thing I would be most afraid of? What's any that? Guesses?
Huh.
Yankees fans. I would be most afraid of Yankees fans. They are ruthless. They are scary. They would keep me up at night, and they would be very unhappy if you moved on from Aaron Judge. For that reason, I think he is staying with the Pinstripes at least in 2023. Gonna guess they do a big deal there to get it done. And props to Aaron Judge for betting on himself. Do we have time for one more, or should we?
Let's do a quick one.
We'll do really, really quick. Here we go. Wrapping it up very quickly. Last hype train.
Little commuter train.
Commuter train. The last hype train has to do with the discussion the three of us had, to be fair, during a commercial break yesterday, watching the World Cup. Soccer has a horrible, horrible tiebreaker. It is the fair play tiebreaker.
Oh, my
God. In which a team with the fewer yellow cards will advance, all other things being equal. The hype train is that soccer must change that. It is awful.
I'm on that train. Change that thing. This is not youth soccer, Sky River Valley Recreational League. No. This is the World Cup. This
Shout
is
out FIFA. Sky River.
I know you guys are already corrupt as heck. Go ahead and switch this right now.
It's weird that FIFA isn't like the team with more yellow cards. Respect. You got away with it. All right. Bump is boarding. Curtis, are you?
Absolutely boarding that train. That is a garbage ruling. These teams, they're not going anywhere. I'm sure you could find Fox to televise a playoff game to send one of these two teams to the knockout round. Yeah, it makes no sense. Whoever has the least amount of yellow cards, miss me with that.
Horrible, horrible.
Yeah, let's play clean soccer.
Yeah, get out of here with that one. All right, that has been Hype Train.
Trophies.
And this has been Bump and Stacy. We are not going anywhere, though. We're bringing on Dave Wyman. We got some Seahawks players joining us at 12:15. We're going to get started, though, recapping the Seahawks loss and looking ahead to a game against the Rams. The Huddle is coming your way next.